What you're about to listen to is an edit created by the Dialogue Project, with the full permission of everyone involved in the conversation. If you can hear my voice clearly, the volume will be about right for you. Thank you for listening.
I feel quite often really empty, numb, kind of lost. And to me, the whole pain thing with self-harm as well kind of brings you back to reality a bit more, makes you feel, you feel something.
Are we recording, by the way?
We are, yeah. We can just chat about it.
Does it make you feel alive?
Yeah, kind of. Because, I mean, when you feel numb and empty, it's like you just feel like your body's gone to sleep. Like when you sit on your arm and it goes numb, you just feel like that. You just feel like you're floating around like a lost ghost or something. Yeah. So then you self-harm, you've got the pain going on, you've got the blood going on.
Yeah.
So it's like, it kind of, it distracts you in a way.
Yeah.
You've got all that pain hurting for like 2 or 3 days because of the sore cuts, and it's like, you feel like you're here again.
It's very nice to be asked to be.
Well, interviewed. Well, I suppose it is interviewed, but...
Because you don't quite know what's going to come up.
It's a very private thing.
What does interview mean?
So...
It's where you're asked a question.
The deeper the better, I guess.
Where you hear the question, and where the... In a funny kind of way, where the question and the answer unite. And they're not really different. One is simply the forerunner to the next, as it
You mean the question is the forerunner to the answer, and the answer is the forerunner to the next question?
Yeah, I'm all right, because you're actually kind of interested in it, whereas like, some people freak out about it.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, God, do you really do that?
Do you not tell people because of that reaction?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Unless, of course, they see it, they ask me, they have a genuine interest in that and me.
Yeah.
Then I'm all right talking about it.
You know, sometimes you're asked a question.
It's a very private thing.
And the answer arises. If you don't think about it, if you let there be silence round the question. And it's a remarkable thing. The one very clear thing when that happens, over questions of these are questions of I don't know, really, not questions of fact, perhaps, but questions other sorts of questions.
The way I do it normally is with kind of like a Stanley knife or scalpel. That's how I normally do it. Kind of, it's going to sound grim, but favourite place,
yeah.
Don't know how else to say it, is my arm.
Yeah.
But being in the summer, I try not to do it, because obviously it's something I don't want people to see.
Yeah, okay.
So I kind of tend to go for the legs.
In the philosophical world, one or two of the people who are in my and the both the old head of the philosophy school and the new philosophy school are wonderful listeners, and you notice immediately. So you sit down. It's as if, first of all, you were the only thing in the world for them.
To have somebody be like that once in a while would be nice.
But within that, there's this fantastic space. That's what I can do. It's, you know, it's like an auditorium. It's so big.
Yeah.
And the possibilities are endless. It's completely still. It's absolutely accepting. There's no...
What's the it in that? Do you mean that when you say it's completely still, it's...
Yes. That's the feeling you get, is what I suppose I mean. It's a sort of... But I suppose maybe it's more than that. It's something that you share.
Because I don't have anyone to talk to about it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I remember sitting with this chap. I was in this big... He was in a house near the Isle of Wight. The big drawing room.
Yeah.
With a fire, and he's sitting in this big ring, quite an imposing figure in a way, and yet I was sitting with someone as near to me and as close to me as I've ever known. It's very beautiful. I feel quite moved talking about it in a way, because in a way I was so close to him that I was talking to myself. And I remember having both spoken and answered the question.
Yes.
Simply to be with this man, and I think I said quite a bit actually. And there was this shared delight, and what arose was real joy.
Sometimes my dad sees my arm and
that's real joy.
He kind of shouts at me, and that's not the kind of reaction I need when I'm at rock bottom.
No.
Being made to feel even worse, otherwise it would just send me up to my room to do more.
It was just there in the room for both of us, you know, and it was a sort of as if we were both warming our hands and the light of the warmth of the fire.
I mean, if I only have like little cuts that aren't that deep,
yeah,
then it kind of doesn't feel like I've done enough. But like the big deep cuts, quite often, like, you'll feel them being quite sore for like 2 or 3 days afterwards.
Yeah.
And that to me kind of, it's like if I knock my arm or rub my arm, it's kind of like a reminder, and it sort of calms me down again if I get a little bit worked up, because obviously it's painful, it's sore.
Yeah, of course.
So, and sometimes I'll pick at them as well, just to create that pain again.
What arose was real joy.
Sometimes it doesn't bleed much, and other times it does. Like, these cuts weren't all that deep. I had one deep one that's still healing now, but the rest weren't. I mean, they've gone already.
Yeah.
And they weren't that deep, but there was a lot of blood for some reason. So, and because there was, I guess I didn't feel the need to do it anymore. And I had one that was quite deep, so...
The whole thing is contained in this space and...
And then I started arguing with my mum again and threw a few things as well.
Yeah.
I hit walls as well.
Actually, the real word is freedom.
I hit walls as well.
Absolute freedom.
Is there like a ritual to it? Is it something you do... You know, like the knives you use, if you've got those in a special place, is it like something
you do?
They're
just by my bed.
Okay.
I'm surprised my dad hasn't found them and thrown them out. They're just sitting there by my bed quite openly. So
you can say anything you want. You know, there's no... that you're not constrained, and you don't have to think, am I going to be... You can just say what you... And then you recognise...
How are you really feeling today?
Several things. Well, one is... very great precision.
I'm about 5.
Out of 10?
Yeah.
Okay.
Suddenly you're speaking in a way which is precise, clear, conscious.
That's good for me. Yeah.
And remarkably, it's formed, and it's the substance of what's being said is beautifully formed.
I was bullied at school till I left at 16, and then... I was really depressed when I left school at 16. I remember that. I met a guy called Jake, who I started going out with for 2 years. Started doing my A-levels. I remember being really depressed all through my A-levels, finding it really hard. I had to drop one of my subjects, dropped French. And then my parents split up.
Yeah.
And then 6 months later, Jake died in an accident. So...
While you were still together?
Yeah. Just before my 18th birthday. So the river's quite hard to look at, because he died in a sort of canoe. He wasn't a canoeist, but him and his friend just sort of went out in a canoe kind of late at night, and it sort of happened then. And I don't know, maybe it was because of all the bullying, my parents splitting up, Jake dying, maybe that's why I'm the way I am now. I don't know.
Because one of the sort of philosophical ideas I find really interesting is that everything that speech to begins from silence. Like the phrases and the words I'm uttering now begin in silence, play on the stage and end. And they go back to silence, they arise from them. And it's as if when you're rarely speaking and there's real listening, which in fact I mean the same thing there, what's more magic than what's being said is the silence that supports it all.
Sometimes I am proud of the fact that I do hide it so well, and that people kind of, when they do find out, they're totally shocked, because it makes you think, oh, well, at least I kind of don't look like this miserable old cow to the rest of the world. Because that's what I do feel like, that what must people think of me? Because I have a real big thing about what people think of me.
This is important to you?
Yeah, okay. Big time.
Do you enable listening in others? Is that part of what you do?
Well, I must say, I do. I try. Actually, when I try, of course, I screw it up completely. But there are times when you can end up... This is a lovely example, because I see that you're a wonderful listener yourself.
Oh, can I just tell you what you just said? I see that you're a wonderful listener.
What must people think of me? Because I have a real big thing about what people think of me.
OK, I'm going to push you a bit harder. How do you know? How can you tell?
The most obvious thing is that I find I'm saying things that I feel are quite magical, really. I mean, I don't mean that in any big... It's not... I don't mean it's me being clever. I just find I'm being articulate.
Do you imagine a time when you don't self-harm anymore?
I think that's right. I wonder if it really... Certainly that's the very best measure I know, is that I am now speaking as I wouldn't normally speak, in a way. And it is because there is this...
I'd like to.
There is this sense of... you give the... You provide this stage on which one may turn. And really turn, like I feel free. I feel like I feel myself, sort of way, and that's a lovely thing.
Do I really need to go crying to somebody, like begging for help? It's like when they know what I'm like, but nobody's there, like, you're right, how are you today? And like, if they see me down, like, what's wrong? Do you want to talk about it? Yeah. Nobody's like that.
Actually, the real word is freedom.
It's best not to trust anybody, then you don't get hurt.
Absolute freedom.
I suppose if you don't trust anyone, maybe you're not that close to anyone.
I am close to people, but they don't make me feel like I can come to them when I need them. And that's what I need. Because when I do get upset, I'm on my own.
Yeah.
I have to deal with it on my own, because I don't feel I've got anybody there who is there with open arms.
Yeah.
Who would listen to how I'm feeling and talk to me about whatever's on my mind. So, yeah.
What would you like them to do?
Just be there for me. So then maybe I don't have to self-harm.
Someone as near to me and as close to me as I've ever known.
Or even just to have somebody who doesn't quite understand, just to say, come here, give us a cuddle, everything will be all right.
Someone as near to me.
I can't ever think when I've ever had that. And that's not hard to give, is it? For somebody who doesn't even understand, you can at least pretend.
And as close to me as I've ever known.
Yeah, I guess the pain sort of takes my mind off what I'm feeling.
So it distracts you.
Yeah, it is a distraction and a release as well, so... Because I don't have anyone to talk to about it.
Yeah.
So...
You know, you have to... I remember I used to work for the Samaritans for a little while, and we had a series of lectures, and there was one by Chad Barr, the founder of the Samaritans, and he told this story of how He had this lady who was clearly very upset, sat down, and they sat down to have a dialogue, and she started, and he couldn't get a question in edgeways.
Yeah.
For 2 hours, he couldn't get a question in edgeways. He just went on and on and on. And then she stopped, and he wrote, "I saw my chance, I jumped at it, I said nothing." I said nothing.
I hit walls as well.
And she jumped up, apparently, he told the story. 10 seconds later, shook him by the hand, said, "That's absolutely one of the best conversations I've ever had. Thank you for your advice." And went out. He said nothing at all. He said nothing at all. But he'd been listening.
I mean, they tell people who are trying to stop to hold ice cubes.
Yeah.
But I don't think that would be enough.
Have you tried it?
No.
No.
I keep thinking about it, but...
We have to stop talking.
That's amazing.
I haven't got any of them little ice cube maker things anymore.
Quite seriously, I thought we'd done about 5 minutes.
And likewise. You take really good care of your hands as well. I mean, you've got lovely nails and...
Yeah, I've broken a few nails before.
Yeah.
It's like, damn, I didn't want that nail to break. And you're kicking yourself.
Oh, that's another way of yourself, I'm kicking yourself.
I don't know that I've known 25 minutes go like that
so far
in my whole life.
Well,
oh, thank you.
This is
wonderful.
Thank you. Let me tell you something.